give of yourself that which has been lost. That is another. And if you restore his heart, he will return only to you. I would rather we both spend eternity alone and grieving than to watch another instant of him in arms that are not mine. That is the last. And so it was Dancing Wind who hid herself in the caves, and, alone, began her task. Slowly and carefully, she pieced together the remains of Blade That Soars. But the heart was only half its original size, for Hollow Knife had usurped the rest. And so she gave half her own heart to its making, so that the light inside flared once more, and Blade That Soars opened his eyes again, newly resurrected. Dancing Wind's sacrifice had made their hearts glass like one, so that Blade That Soars wore hers, and she wore his. And so the god rose from his grave, and smote that false prince, Hollow Knife, and took back his lands, and his seas, and his skies. The man in the black onyx mask stood, and began a series of complicated dances with the woman in diamonds, moving faster until the sleeves of their robes were a blur, their steps light and quick despite the heaviness of their hua. The man in the sunstone mask reeled back with every spin, retreating into the shadows of the stage. As one, Blade That Soars and Dancing Wind struck out at him. A very real puff of fire erupted from their fingers. The stage erupted into flames. There were gasps from the onlookers. But just as quickly, the fire was doused. And among the rising smoke, we could see that Hollow Knife was gone. But the false prince cursed the world. Now none of the fields could seed magic. Now all the world's creatures lay stricken with death and disease. His followers hid, swearing their vengeance against the god who had so smote their master. And all were lessened as a consequence. And so Blade That Soars took his heart, strengthened by the love of Dancing Wind, and broke it into three parts. The first he buried in the soil, so that the fields could once more grow with magic. But because it was only a third of his heart, not all the land took hold, and so runeberries grew with lesser abundance. The second he gave to his creatures to heal their sickness. But because it was only a third of his heart, death and pestilence could not be cured completely, and so they shall always remain afflicted. The third he kept for himself, and it was here that Blade That Soars became the first of the Heart Forgers. But despite his treachery, he could not find it in his heart to kill his brother. Instead, he banished Hollow Knife to the underworld, where he was to wander among the ruins of the dead for all eternity. And little tears fell to her knees before Dancing Wind. "Forgive me, dear sister," she moaned. "It was Hollow Knife who bewitched my mind against you. I would not go against you for all the world." And Dancing Wind's heart was heavy when she replied, "You mocked me and sent me away. You are no better than Hollow Knife, and given the chance to do harm to me and Blade That Soars, you shall do so again. I will not banish you from the world as Hollow Knife has been banished, but no longer will you be able to use life's magic for your own. That is one. You preferred Blade That Soars dead in your arms than alive to my touch. Henceforth, your influence shall be limited to the ways of the dark and of the dead. That is another. And you will never be able to give your heart away, like I joined mine to his, without taking most of your strength and your power. In this way, you will learn what it is like to be completely and utterly alone. That is the last. The Asha dancer in her gown of white and gray, with her mask of moonstones and black pearls, cowered back from her sister, swept a hand up to shield her face, and crept away from the stage. And little tears, the first dark Asha, fled, but never could escape her sister's curse. There was a long pause. All the actors on stage remained still, and a nervous titter ran through the crowd.
"What's going on?"
a novice on my right whispered, puzzled.
"Lady Braheet was supposed to enter,"
another girl hissed, clearly a veteran.
"She's missed her cue."
"Silence!"
one of the older Asha thundered at us, though it was no use. People began to murmur among themselves. The other dancers on stage, trained not to react when mistakes were made, waited patiently for one of their own that never came. Instead, a loud, keening shrillness ripped through the air, and a deva of gigantic proportions burst through the ground before us, inches away from the stage.
The Asha paused. Above us, bones of dead monsters creaked in the wind. "I learned one important thing at the Darashi Oyun. I learned that there was more to me than they first thought. That there was more to me than even I thought." She drank from two more vials and raised two more deva. From the bones, she called forth the long-tongued Nangate and the many-eyed Zayrik. The first was an abstract form given life, with a torso composed primarily of humps and legs. Its head was made of two faces, one forever looking forward and the other forever looking back, and it had a horned back, webbed feet, and bloodshot eyes. The second was a reptilian satyr that stood on its hind legs. Five horns sprung up from its forehead, but its face was elongated and furred, with a snout like those they call a crocodile that slither up and down the swamps of Yadosha, but certainly horrifying to see in the cloven beast before me. As before, the girl took their hearts, and I watched them disappear into the depths of her heart's glass. They all flocked eagerly to her, like trained dogs. "What do you intend to do with them?" I mustered enough courage to ask, though I feared the answer. She cast her gaze toward the east. "Denoris would be a good place to start," she said thoughtfully, selecting a kingdom like it was a dress to wear on the morrow.
24. I didn't remember much. I heard the sounds of people screaming, felt my world turn upside down as a mad dash commenced, upending my seat in the process. Fox was on me in an instant, rolling me out of the way from the stampede before anyone could trample over us. Lady Hami would have been critical of my reflexes. Only then did my training take over, and I pushed away enough of my shock to scramble to my feet. It was complete chaos. The bulk of the audience had fled, but the Asha remained. I could see the sparks of magic knifing through the air at the creature that had clawed its way out from the floor, leaving a hole on the stage the size of an Ashaka. It was a hideous, serpent-like thing with three heads, each with a long snout and teeth that were the stuff of nightmares. There were two on each mouth, curved cruelly upward along the sides of their jaws, like a boar's. Their long necks ended in a scaled body the size of a large farm, with wings the span of two horses, and a large tail that ended in a spike. Its unblinking yellow eyes blazed at me from underneath hooded, scaled ridges of brow. My heart's glass quickened. It was a black dragon. It screamed again, and I saw fire leap into the air and fall in an arc toward the creature, bathing its stomach in flames. Smoke curled up from Althi's clenched fist, arms still raised toward the beast. It had little effect. The beast reared its head up, and its tail whipped forward, destroying the stage in one blow. Many of the apprentices had fled. Some remained rooted to the spot, staring up in horror.
Taya!
I heard Polaire roar over the din.
Take as many of the novices as you can and get them out!
I hesitated. I was a dark Asha. A dark Asha in training. And it was a Deva. But there must be some way I could help.
No, Taya!
Fox made the decision for me, grabbing my hand and steering me away. With his other arm, he grabbed a frightened apprentice around her waist, lifted her up, and ran. I stumbled after him, following other Asha guiding the rest to safety, away from the Willow District and toward the Ankyun Market.
Make for the castle!
I heard someone scream behind me.
Their walls are the strongest in the city!
I didn't think those walls, strongest or otherwise, would stand up to a three-headed monster of that size. But we all turned obediently toward it, knowing nowhere else to go. Groups of people were already running past the palace gates, soldiers stationed in places to herd them inside like frightened sheep to make room for others still pouring in.
I have to go back, I told Fox, stopping short just of the gates.
Don't be stupid, Tia.
Fox, I have to go back. Lady Michaela won't be able to face that thing alone.
I was desperate, as frightened as I had ever been. But I also knew that I would never forgive myself if I ran while Lady Michaela stayed behind.
Keep behind me!
An advantage of our bond was his knowing any more attempts to convince me otherwise wouldn't work. We deposited the rest of the novices with the Asha who had taken charge of the refugees, then pushed against the tide of people fighting to enter, back toward the training hall. The battle had not been without its casualties. I saw a few bodies huddled up in crumpled heaps at the corner of my eye but refused to look. I forged ahead, matching Fox's pace.
I told you to get to safety!
Polaire's Hua was torn in several places, and she had a small cut across her cheek. I was too wound up to speak and could only shake my head. I saw a row of Asha with their hands extended out to the dragon, shield runes glittering above their raised palms. Every time the beast lashed toward us with its tail, or whenever one of the heads tried to snap at the nearest Asha with its teeth, it encountered that wall of air, preventing it from drawing too close. Another group of Asha formed behind the first, and here, different runes gleamed. Burn, storm, lightning. There were 24 Death Seekers, all clad in black, also slashing runes in the air. But none of the magic seemed able to hurt it. The dragon only shook off the worst of their attacks, and the Asha flinched when it rammed into their wall.
It's an Azi,
Lady Sita, one of the Asha reinforcing the shield, muttered.
The books say it is the Deva most impervious to rune forms. We can't keep this up for much longer.
I looked around frantically for Lady Michaela, just in time to see her step through the line of Asha and walk toward the beast. I leaped forward, but arms wrapped around my waist and held me back.
Don't even think about it.
Fox's voice was loud against my ear.
Do you want to get yourself killed?
I can help!
I struggled, but he was too strong for me.
Don't think you can do what she does after raising only dead mice and old duchesses and brothers, Tia. She knows what she's doing.
Grimly, Lady Michaela raised her hands up. The dragon's three heads focused themselves on her. I watched her draw the dark, looked on as I felt the magic lift up and around the Azi, the dark trails winding around it like rope. The huge creature struggled, and I felt a wild glimmer of hope.
Stop!
Lady Michaela commanded. It ignored her and continued to struggle.
Stop!
The dark Asha repeated, her voice louder. The dragon screeched, and the wall of wind began to shake.
One of its heads lunged toward Lady Michaela, its mouth open, and my screams were lost over the sound of its roaring. A small string of wind wrapped around Lady Michaela and yanked her back, and the Aussie's teeth missed her by mere inches. Panting, Polaire lowered her arms, and the wind around Lady Michaela fizzled out. The dragon growled, shook all three heads, and stepped forward to try again.
Let me go, Fox!
I'm not going to let you.
Let me go.
He dropped his arms, and I was free, tearing past the wall and toward the Asha. I heard Polaire yelling after me, but I paid her no attention, punching at the air to draw a compulsion rune of my own. I aimed it at one of the heads, snapping dangerously close, and focused. No amount of training can prepare you for stepping inside a monster's head. There was nothing there to cobble any logical thought together. Nothing close to reason. But there were emotions running rampantly through. Anger and rage and fear and hunger. All unfiltered by any semblance of a mind. Only a monstrous, terrible awareness. I didn't remember much. I remembered the feeling of being in two places at once. Of staring up at the three-headed dragon and at the same time staring back down at myself from a much greater height. I felt a sudden need to destroy and maim, coupled with a towering rage of such proportions that it almost felt like a separate entity.
Kill,
that rage whispered, its intentions spiraling out toward Lady Michaela, who remained still on the ground, unmoving.
No!
I put everything I had into that one word and turned it into a command. The being hesitated, and I repeated it again, pulling at the remainder of the magic around me from the runes the other Asha wielded.
No!
I wrapped the magic around me like it was a cloak, and then like it was the strongest armor ever forged.
No!
Lady Michaela did not protest when I drew the rune away from her, added it to bolster my own. In that moment, despite the disorientation and the feeling of wrongness, I felt powerful and complete. And more importantly, I knew that the beast knew this.
No!
The creature backed away from us and spread its wings to prepare for flight.
Kill it, Tia!
I could hear Polaire screaming at me.
Kill it!
But I hesitated. As strong as I felt I was, I could not bring myself to say those fatal words. I was trapped between two minds. And at that moment, I was a part of the creature just as it was a part of me. My hesitation was all it needed. I was assailed by a sudden image, a vast, serene lake, glittering. The creature's thoughts reached for those waters, yearning. With one final scream of fury, the dragon hurtled itself through the air, flying at such great speeds that soon it was nothing but a speck in the distance, heading toward the fullness of the moon. A few seconds later, it was gone, and the only thing left to remember it by was the carnage around me. The moans of the injured and the dying. My legs gave out from underneath me, but Fox caught me before I could hit the floor.
You stupid, absolute, unbelievable idiot,
I heard him say. My eyes were trained on Lady Michaela, who had not moved at all. Polaire and two other Asha were already by her side, talking urgently among themselves. There was a faint whiff of something metallic. Looking down, I was surprised to see that the front of my clothes was drenched in blood. I must have fainted after that. My brother was sitting by my side, scowling, inside my room at the Valerian. Fox never had a good bedside manner to begin with, and he was in a foul mood long before I'd opened my eyes.
Whatever possessed you to do something so dangerous?
He all but exploded as soon as he saw I was awake.
Of all the foolish ideas, did you know how easily you could have been killed?
But I wasn't killed. The excuse sounded weak, even to me.
Out of sheer luck! How many times have you faced down a dragon before, Tia? And don't try arguing with me. I was in your head when it all happened. I felt that Deva in my head as thoroughly as you did. It could have killed you just as easily as it killed so many others.
Can I at least get some rest before you scold me? My head was pounding. I felt like I'd just been pushed down a cliff and had hit every stone and branch on the way down. My mind was free and clear, but there was something curled somewhere in the recesses of my mind that Fox did not seem aware of. Something not even I could reach. There was a long silence before he sighed. Taking great care not to put pressure on the bandages wrapped around my leg, Fox leaned over and wrapped me in a fierce hug.
Did you know how scared you made me?
His voice was muffled against my hair.
Did you know how close I came to losing you?
That would be ridiculous, was what I wanted to say in an effort to lighten the mood. If I died, you wouldn't have had time to miss me, because you would have died too. A choking sound rose up from the back of my throat, and I burst into tears without trying. He hugged me again.
Idiot,
I heard him say, but this time with none of the heat. Someone cleared her throat. Mistress Parmina stood by the doorway, accompanied by Polaire and Alfi. None of them looked happy.
If I had my way,
the old woman said before either of us could speak,
you would be cleaning the outhouses in perpetuity. Banned from the rest of your lessons for at least 2 more years. Forbidden to so much as raise your hand as draw in the dark. Massage my feet until you are older and grayer and hopefully wiser. I can think of many other such chastisements. In fact, I will punish you regardless of what the other elders say.
She pointed at a small tray on a table beside me that contained several slices of runeberries.
Eat them quickly. You will need your strength. The elders require your presence later this afternoon. They will want their turns at yelling at you for your insolence.
I knew better than to argue with Mistress Parmina at this point, though, and dutifully picked up a piece. The mistress of the Valerian sighed, turning toward the other two Asha and speaking like I was no longer in the room.
Did I not tell Michaela that she was going to be trouble? And yet, I have no right to be so surprised. Michaela was just as unruly in her younger days.
Michaela is one of our best Asha, mistress, Alfi murmured. In time, Tia here might prove the same.
In time, but not today.
Mistress Parmina shot me one last look, sighed again, and left. If she could condescend to listen to us every now and then. Polaire gave me a scowl.
Whatever possessed you to run out like that, Tia? Do you know how easily the Aussie could have killed you?
I was afraid it was going to hurt Lady Michaela. I mumbled.
Is she?
Resting comfortably, thanks to you. Although I am still very angry. You are never to do that again, do you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
She snorted. Said so easily and ignored just as quickly, too.
She sat down on the bed beside me.
Oh, Tia,
she sighed.
What are we to do with you? If you'd been my own child, I would have given you such a throttling. Unfortunately, the elders do not think so.
The elders? The Ashika Association wants to speed up your novitiate, Alfi said. You will be made an Asha by the end of the year, and sent off to tame your first Deva.
Cold fear gripped me.
Polaire nodded knowingly.
Since you are this eager to confront Deva, they are doing their best to quicken the process. We will accompany you, of course, as will a Death Seeker. And Zoya, too, unfortunately. She is skilled in the runes, and the disadvantage of having her for a sister has come back to bite us in our behinds. Fortunately, you will be kept too busy to get into too much mischief.
What about Lick?
Lick is fine. The elders have not yet called on him. Worrying about it now will not change anything.
Polaire snorted.
There is some trickery at work here, and I suspect these elusive faceless have been busy. If they have found some way to control the Ozzy, then we're in trouble. Which of the three do you think did it?
As far as I know, Usij is still shackled at his Denorian fortress, but it would be easy enough to sneak out when no one is looking.
There have been no sightings of Druj in the last few weeks, and no one's quite sure if he's still in Yodosha. Similarly, there has been no word of Einar in Estera, though the bulk of her sect has been imprisoned.
Quite disturbing, Alfie agreed.
Can I see Lady Michaela?
I asked. Polaire looked at my empty plate, at the rinds that were all that was left of the rune berries. She looked back at Alfie, who nodded. Lady Michaela was sleeping in her bed, her face white against the pillows piled up around her. Her lips were bloodless, and the dark circles around her eyes were more pronounced. My heart broke for her.
You are not as quiet as you think you are,
she said, opening her eyes. But she smiled, and a bit of color returned to her cheeks.
I'm so sorry.
The tears began before I'd reached her bedside, and they wouldn't stop. Every fear and small terror I had felt during the play, the growing dread of knowing they would farm me out the way they had farmed Lady Michaela out to the Deva, like cattle led toward a high cliff, bubbled to the surface. And I wept. I looked at Lady Michaela and I saw my future. And I knew then that I did not want to lie in her bed, wearing her stretched skin and her sunken eyes. Thin hands enveloped me.
It would appear that I owe you my life,
Lady Michaela whispered in my ear.
I hope they did not go hard on you. Even so.
I made her promise to never draw the Raising Dark again. But it rung as hollow as the vow I had given Polaire so many minutes ago. And in my mind, the darkness curled at that strange corner, waiting. But for what? I didn't know.
The stranger came as a surprise. I woke at dawn to find him wandering the beach, staring up with dread at a massive skull. He started upon seeing me. I didn't think there would be anyone else here, he explained, speaking in Denorian. I took an immediate dislike to him. He wore too many rings on his fingers, his heart's glass nearly hidden by the copious glitter of jeweled embellishments that littered his neck. He stank of magic. Even I, who have had no training, could smell it on his person. My Drekta upbringing rose to the surface, as much as I tried to stem its ascent. Like Estera, Drekta have no love for Denorian folk. Are those things real? He asked, staring up at the hideous bones that stuck out from the sand. His heart's glass glittered, more green than gold. I did not need to be an Asha to read what was written there. As real as you or I responded shortly. To find such a skeleton intact is a rare treat, the man marveled. Is it Deva? Imagine how many millions of li it could sell for at the black markets. It is just what she told me. She? The woman in my dream. I followed the blue moon over 20 hills in 20 days and found her standing underneath the bones of a great beast. She spoke of valuable cargo that I must deliver, and promised the most precious of rewards if I obeyed. I began to tremble. What is her name? I do not know, but she has soft brown skin and dark hair, and a dragon lines her robes. Her eyes... And he too shuddered. You are Lu Ren of Denoris, a governor of the Santiang province. Neither of us heard her approach. The man recoiled at the sight of her, with her hideous pet Taurvi trotting by her side.
A Deva!
He stumbled and fell onto the sand, but continued to scramble away. Stay, the girl said gently. Lu Ren stopped. He turned in compliance to her wishes, his face a mask of anguish. In 3 days' time, Denoris will be overrun by Deva, and Santiang will be among the first to fall. They will scorch your lands and destroy all that they see. They will enter the capital of Tuadan, and nothing will remain of your houses, nor of the palaces of your emperor and his royal court. The merchant swayed on his feet, wringing his hands.
But why?
He cried.
Because it is necessary,
the girl told him sadly. Because the man who sits on your throne is a cruel emperor, and an obstacle in my path. And that is why you are to return to Santiang immediately, to warn your people of what is to come. You will order them to flee the cities and to take refuge in the mountains. Save as many as you are able. Spread the word to other towns and encourage them to do the same. In 5 days, Denoris will fall. Do not let your people fall with it. The man recoiled, but even in the face of such tragedy, his avarice struggled for dominion.
And my reward, mistress? He asked. The most precious of rewards that you promised?
You leave with your life intact, good merchant, the girl replied, and the Taurvi raised its head and meowed at the terrified Denori. Surely that is the most precious of rewards. Now go. And so the merchant turned with a cry of despair and began his trek back toward Santiang, leaving nothing but his footprints behind.
25. The Association of Asha had 30 members, half of whom were mistresses of Ashaka. A quarter of them were chosen delegates among owners of the Chahana, and the rest represented the numerous florists, ateliers, apothecaries, and hairdressers within the vicinity of the willows. I couldn't see much of a distinction then. All were gray-haired women of an age between 70 and 85, with elegant, flowing robes wrapped around their wizened persons, and their hair sorted into appropriate buns. I don't know whether they were selected because of their similarities, or if their similarities became apparent after they were chosen, but I could only tell them apart from the hua they wore. All looked hostile. I stood before them, hoping I could somehow melt through the floors, away from their accusing gazes. Did they look on every Asha aspirant with this kind of bitterness, I wondered? Or did they reserve this kind of special hate for Asha like me, who caused so much trouble even before they made their debut? I was nearly 15. It had only been a week since the Darashi Oyun, and Mistress Parmina was true to her word. Aside from a temporary suspension of all my lessons, I was forbidden to attend parties for another month. I had to turn down both Counselor Ludwig's and Prince Kantz's offers, though Lady Shadi told me that the prince inquired frequently about me at the Chahana. I had to clean the outhouses. I was made to kneel on the street before the Elders' Association and remain there, unmoving, from noon until 4 p.m. These were still not the worst sanctions the mistress could have meted out to me, and I suspected Lady Michaela had convinced her to moderate my punishments.
You are here because Mistress Parmina has petitioned you for the rank of Asha,
said one,
Should I speak up? Or should I simply nod? Lady Michaela had said nothing about this. I inclined my head, not trusting my voice at that moment.
This is an unusual matter. Apprentices require at least another year of mastery. What skills do you believe you possess that makes you believe you deserve exemption?
I was sure now that they were going through the motions, falling back on questions they gave other novices since time immemorial, because the whole city by now knew what skills I possessed. Not all of them necessarily welcomed. I am well versed in all my current lessons, m'ladies. I can dance songs at a grade above my level, and I hold a third tier in combat. I am familiar with the culture of all 8 kingdoms, including those from the Yodosha city-states and from Drift. I am fluent in the language of flowers. I can treat wounds and read heart's glass. I have attended over 50 parties under the watchful eyes of my sisters and have always strove to obey my elders. That last part was a bit of a stretch, but none of the mistresses batted an eye. I don't think anyone had blinked since I began speaking.
Very well. You may begin the first part of your test. The piece we have chosen for you is Waves at the Shore. You may begin.
I bowed and positioned my hands and feet accordingly. Somewhere behind the women's seats, someone began to play, and I moved across the floor, letting the music seep into my skin, my mind blank as I focused on nothing but the song and my response to it. I allowed all the worries and fear that had plagued me in the days leading up to this moment to melt away, to block Fox's constant presence in my mind the way I was taught to, until little remained but me and the music. I danced, and for those several minutes, I was nothing more than a crest in the sea, a swell among the tides that crashed into the rocky seashores of my mind, leaving pain as I rolled and ebbed against the sand, aimless against the vastness of ocean, and at peace. The dancing hall was quiet when I finished and bowed again. The mistresses held themselves too rigidly for me to guess at what went on in their heads.
"Sing a village feast,"
one of them instructed. I was on less confident territory here, despite it being one of the simpler songs in the repertoire. But I sang nonetheless. Instructor Tetti had given me enough training to learn how to modulate my voice, to pitch it in the same range as the instruments to maintain the harmony. But unlike my dancing, I knew there was nothing special about it. Once that was over, I bowed again, awaiting the next set of instructions.
"Name me the 8 types of surgical procedures available to us."
"Incision, bloodletting, stitching, probing, cutting, scraping, puncturing." For a moment I panicked, the last answer not immediately coming to mind. "Breathe," I told myself, relying on the meditation instructor Ka had taught me and the techniques I had come to rely on to calm myself. "And excision."
"Name me 5 uses of ender root."
"To treat gout, to congeal blood on open wounds, to relieve the pain from bones melt disease, to alleviate symptoms of stone cough, and as a remedy during the initial stages of progressive blindness."
"Give me the names of 5 nobles whose lineages descended from the great heroes."
"Prince Kans of Odalia, Duke Morion of Tresea, Prince Yesta of Denoris, Baron Shallan of Ysterra, and Second Minister Kisling of the Yodosha city-states."
"You mentioned the Prince of Odalia, but not his father. Who is the king? Why is that so?"
I cleared my throat, hoping my cheeks had not reddened as I replied. "Given the testimony of King Randrel the Quiet, whose corpse was recovered due to unexpected circumstances, it was shown that King Parthen, King Telamane's own father, was not King Randrel's descendant at all, but a descendant of Queen Lisette and Commander Bosfin of the Royal Army. He therefore cannot claim descent from Koshti, one of the five great heroes. However, Prince Kantz is a descendant of Koshti from his mother's family, whose ancestor married into the Latvel family.
Ah.
The woman shuffled a few papers in her hand.
I see. History that has only recently come to light. Very well. 20 feet above your head, there hangs a silver hoop 5 inches in diameter, attached to a piece of string. Use any one of the runes at your disposal to bring it down.
I paused, stunned. No one had told me about this part of the test. Had I been any of the other Asha, it could have been easily accomplished. A fire rune to burn through the string, a strong enough gust of wind to snap at the line. Hastily, I drew in the dark and cast my mind below us, at the ground. I found nothing. No taste of bone and decay, no hint of death. I threw my mind lower, burrowing through. Impossible. There was always a dead mouse or insect, some decomposing animal, no matter how little or unimportant, that I could reach out to with my thoughts and find contact. Faces watched me, knowing. Their hearts' glass gleamed silver in the gloom. They had planned for this. I could not wield any other rune but the dark. And so they had made painstakingly sure that it would not be easy for me. I could tunnel through the ground for years until my ears bleed and still find nothing. And that left me with only one last recourse. I can't do it! The words echoed throughout the hall, the finality of them ringing in my ears. I'm sorry, but I can't do it.
Is that the answer you would like to submit?
The old woman's voice sounded mocking. I swallowed. Yes. I can't.
The test has concluded. Return to the next room to await our decision.
Fox, Mistress Parmina, and Lady Michaela still waited for me, and they were now joined by Polair and Alfie, which only made things worse. Polair jumped up when she saw me enter. Well? She demanded eagerly. How was it? Did you pass? Did you allow those old geezers to intimidate you? Polair, Alfie remonstrated. Let her speak. I failed. I could not help but feel miserable. I felt like I had let everyone down. What do you mean, failed? Did they tell you? No, but I'm almost sure I did. Let's see what the association has to say, Lady Michaela said optimistically. I'm certain you're wrong. I didn't want to get her hopes up, but didn't know what else to say. I only nodded, my head bowed. It seemed like a waste of time to wait for my results. But my melancholy didn't put a damper on the other's spirits. It felt like ages before one of the women entered the room. I kept my eyes on the floor, not wanting to see the expressions on everyone's faces when she revealed the truth.
Thank you for waiting, Mistress Parmina. I am pleased to report that Tia has passed her test at the highest level. She is now free to make her debut at your choosing. Congratulations again.
And then I saw nothing but skin and arms, because Polair had dragged me to my feet and enveloped me in a jubilant hug.
You passed, and at the first level! Ha! And you so ridiculously modest, thinking you'd failed.
I am so proud of you, Tia. Lady Michaela laughed, and Polair scooped her up, adding her to the embrace. This is very good news for us.
We will stage your debut in a few days, Mistress Parmina announced. I see no reason to delay. The Valerian will need cleaning. Rahim and Chesh must be notified.
But I don't understand.
I was confused.
I failed the last test. How could I pass at the highest level?
Lady Michaela gently disentangled us from a still enthusiastic Polaire, who made up for the lapse by latching onto Althi instead. What test was this?
The rune test. They asked me to take down a silver hoop they'd hung from the ceiling, and I refused.
Why?
There was nothing for me to raise, not even a speck of ant.
That was deliberate, Tia. The Asha do a ritual cleaning of the halls before any Asha test, and they are very thorough. I encountered the very same thing during my exams.
But how did you pass?
I did the same thing you did. I refused.
I stared at her, more puzzled than ever.
Think about it, Tia. You have no need to display your proficiency with the dark. If they were not convinced when you raised half the town's dead during your stay at Falling Leaf, they would have believed when you chased away the Ozzy. As you were unable to use the raising rune, what other options did you have?
I could have used compulsion, I said, to force one of the women to take it down for me. I didn't think they would have liked it.
Yes. And now do you understand the reason you passed?
She left me to mull that over as Fox approached.
Are you happy?
Now that I was no longer shielded from him, I felt his thoughts mirroring my own. I think I am, I said, ignoring the little darkness in the corner of my head. I was getting used to compartmentalizing my mind whenever someone new was added to my roster of familiars. Fox had his own space, and then Chief. And they both, to some extent, were dimly aware of the other through the link I shared, and each accommodated for the other's presence. But something else lurked at the farthest reaches of my head. Something that neither of them knew of. Being told that I was now an Asha had unlocked something within it. Like a sleeping giant roused from an ages-long slumber and was now ready to begin the hunt. Don't worry. It's not important. With some effort, I pushed it away for another time.
Then that's all I ask.
And my brother hugged me in turn, smiling.
Congratulations, sis.
I smiled back. It was the only thing I could do. For the first time since raising him, it occurred to me that while Fox was privy to some of my thoughts, he wasn't privy to them all. Lick's testing had not been as smooth. Once more we confronted the Asha Association. But where I had faced them alone, Lick stood with me, Polaire, and Lady Michaela.
It has never been done before,
one of the old women said firmly.
It breaks with our tradition, and tradition must be honored above everything else.
It is an archaic tradition, I argued, more vehement and less apprehensive than I had been at my own test. I don't see why men who can sing and dance and draw runes should be prevented from becoming Asha if they meet all other requirements.
It is an insult to our profession,
another old lady thundered.
It's nearly as ridiculous as a woman joining the Death Seekers.
Well, now, that's a very good idea, mistress,
Polaire drawled.
This is Kion, m'ladies, not Drift. We are at an age where men and women stand together on equal footing, unlike our barbarian brothers to the south. Why shouldn't a woman petition to join the Death Seekers any more than a man can petition to join Asha?
Do you not understand the complications that arise from such thinking?
A particularly weaselly old woman at the end of the table snapped.
It is highly unnatural for men and women to fraternize in this manner.
Unless you wish to purchase the hua they make, of course.
I couldn't help myself. I was familiar enough with many of Rahim's work to know that what the crone wore was an Arakan design.
Perhaps, Lady Michaela said gently. Lick would like to make his case. Swallowing hard, Lick stepped forward. Unlike us, he wore his plain gray robes.
When I was 3 years old, I knew I was not like other boys.
His voice carried, soft and gentle, across the hall.
I did not enjoy rough play or making games with wooden soldiers and other such toys. I loved dolls and dresses. I saw my first Darashi Oyun during my 6th summer, and liked to pretend I was an Asha myself. I am standing before you today to tell you that I have never been so sure of anything else in my life. I am also here to plead for my life.
His voice shook.
I will not survive Death Seeker training. I know it. The only role I can hope to fulfill for the Black Brothers is as a fresh corpse on the plains. I will be nothing more than another victim. Be it of Deva, of Faceless, or of brigands. I can do so much more here in the Willows, and you will have no reason to regret it. I ask you to give me 3 months to prove my worth, and you can see at its end whether I should stay or go. It is only 3 months of your life, but it will decide all of mine.
It was not until the next day that the association announced their verdict.
It is not for us to determine whether the supplicant can withstand the rigors of Death Seeker training, or whether he is more suitable to the way of the Asha. We are here to uphold the laws and customs of the Willows, to ensure that they are followed to the letter. With this in mind, we reject the supplicant's appeal. But we are willing to leave this up again for reassessment after his heart's rune day.
The funerals were held 2 days later. 3 Asha had perished in the battle against the Azi, and the whole community turned up to pay their respects. I stood along the street and watched as they drove the coffins past, which were draped in heavy black ermine. Lady Seleni of the Hawkweed, Lady Brahit of the Imperial, Lady Diana of the Larkspur. I wondered about Polaire. She had lost an Ashaka sister in Hawkweed, possibly a friend. Those with silver hearts glass can't be raised from the dead, Lady Michaela said. It felt wrong somehow, for Dark Asha to grant others a second chance at life, but not to her Asha sisters and Death Seeker brothers. I remembered Brahit from the Falling Leaf. Though my time with her had not been pleasant, I felt sorry to see her gone. Zoya gave nothing away. Her head held high, she marched beside the coffin that held her friend, and I watched them until they turned a corner and were gone from view. The mood within the Willows was somber, but Mistress Parmina had decided not to delay my debut. The preparations were even worse than the one for Lady Shadi's, and my being in the center of the maelstrom only made it worse. A constant stream of people traipsed in and out of the Valerian, most entering my room and catching me in differing stages of undress, because I was once again being measured and dressed for new Hua.
"Can't they announce themselves before coming in?"
I wailed, clutching a discarded robe against my chest. A group of men had just left after a lengthy consultation about the banquet to take place later that evening, heedless of the fact that I was clad only in undergarments when they had first entered.
"I'm a boy too,"
Lick said, grinning at me. Although Chesh served as my official hairdresser, she knew of our close friendship, and had appointed him to be her assistant every time the Valerian required her services.
"But I know you. You're different."
I scowled at him. He was taking his rejection by the Asha Association better than I had.
"I'm not going to do this anymore."
"Do what?"
"They want me to be an Asha, don't they? What if I refuse and hold everything up until they reverse their decision?"
"I'm not going to let you do that for me."
Lick piled my long hair up one side of my head and began to pin several beautiful rhinestone combs into it.
"Hold still,"
Rahim grunted, holding out another robe for me to slip into. As was the custom, I wore a hua that highlighted the Valerian crest, in blue and sea green, and a waist wrap with patterns mimicking the waves of the ocean. There were silver seashells along the edges of my sleeve.
This is the traditional dress you must wear for the one and only time. After that, I shall make the designs of your choosing. Still, this blue is beautiful and of your color. If I had the smoothness of your complexion...
He kissed his fingers with a smacking sound.
Grossivi! Agatha, tuck this piece in here, and we shall see about the waist wrap.
I squirmed free from Rahim's hold. I'm serious.
Thank you.
Lick smiled sadly.
But as much as you think otherwise, an Asha's debut isn't about the Asha. It's about the Ashika. Remember that refusing will dishonor the Valerian and all who live in it.
It isn't fair, I complained. You act more like an Asha than I do.
We have time. That they're willing to reconsider after my heart's rune day gives me hope. I wasn't expecting that.
Lick smiled shyly.
You look beautiful.
I wish I could do more. But I'm glad that you are here with me for this.
The Asha. They are Ostoronish.
Rahim scoffed, tugging at my wrap.
Hypocrites. The sentiments and the emotions they will not be deterred by. They are the greedy lot, Uchenik. The best approach to sway them is to give them what they want. The association. They said no to me, too. Then I come with my hua and the gowns they desire. And now they say yes.
Are we not done yet?
Mistress Parmina poked her head in, looking irritated.
It's time, and I do not want to be late. There are crowds of people outside already.
Crowds of people? I exclaimed. As much as you might dislike it, you're a phenomenon, Tia. Lady Michaela had convinced Mistress Parmina that she was well enough to leave her bed. She sat beside me as Lick and Rahim gave the finishing touches. After everything that's happened, you can't be surprised that you're famous in Onkyo. Enjoy it while you can. It's not every day that one can hold a debut such as yours. I was dubious. Truth to tell, it wasn't the upcoming procession I was dreading, even if it meant I had to be in the public eye. It was the destination that I feared more. Mistress Parmina was not exaggerating. The crowd broke into a loud, raucous cheer the instant I stepped outside, and their jubilant shouts followed me throughout the rest of the walk. I think that after everything that had happened, they were only too happy to find something to celebrate. But the sight of the crowd angered me all of a sudden. You don't understand! I wanted to shout at them. You care nothing about me! All you see are the magic and the pretty clothes and the dances. When this is all over, most of you won't even remember my face. As usual, Fox took a spot beside me without asking anyone for permission. He placed a hand on my shoulder, and I could feel his presence like a balm on my mind.
I know, Tia,
he whispered.
And I agree. But you know this is not the place or time for it.
Mistress Parmina, as the second guest of honor, walked at the front with her head thrown back, beaming like this whole parade was for her benefit. Lady Michaela, Polaire, and Alfie took up positions behind me, with Zoya following closely behind. From time to time, I would sneak a look behind me, but it was hard to tell what the Asha was thinking. Her expression was too serene, and her heart's glass too calm to be genuine. Our journey ended before the temple. White smoke still billowed out from the dome, and Lady Michaela dutifully rang the bell that was the prelude to entering. It was hard enough with everyone watching, but I did my best to slide the door back and step inside, shutting it behind me with some relief, glad that there were still some things in an Asha's life that warranted some privacy. The oracle hadn't changed. She was still